Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, today is Wednesday, September 6th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Guys, how are you tonight?
College football is underway. NFL about to start. Life is
good.
That's
right. It's college football preview night. Listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. Darren wants to talk to you about some college football. We all know he does. We're going to talk some college football. We're going to go through some conferences. But first, we're going to go around the horn with some other sports news that's going on. I'm going to start it off. We had the Jets' final episode of Hard Knocks last night. It's cut day on Hard Knocks. But they didn't show anything. Brownlee made the team. Gibson made the team. And they showed us them cutting Tanzel Smart. But then later on in the episode, he makes the practice squad. I don't know. In prior seasons of Hard Knocks, we've seen them cut players and the reactions. Darren?
I did not watch it last night. But the one thing I can tell you, I heard Joe Douglas refused to allow them to show footage of the cuts.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. That's what I heard, that he did not want to go through that.
I would assume that that was the case, because in prior seasons, they do show some of the cuts and they didn't show any. I will tell you a couple of highlights from the episode. Dalvin Cook looked very good. He looked like he was nimble. He was moving. He was all over the place. We saw Rodgers talking about the UFO sighting that he had with his buddy Steve Levy. They showed us Alan Lazard getting a tattoo. We saw Sauce Gardner signing autographs at his birthday celebration. And then we saw basically the whole team at the Michael Jackson Broadway play. We got some solid talking about the team and what this means this year. And that was kind of the episode. It was kind of a ho-hum episode. I will tell you, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance with all these other things that were non-football related. I thought it was an okay episode. I thought the season on a whole was good. Rodgers, I thought, was the key to this whole thing. Without Rodgers, I think this is an issue this year. But it was pretty good. Any comments on Hard Knocks?
Honestly, not seeing it last night, I can't give you much more than that.
Okay.
I'm just pumped for football. I mean, I just to say it as a Jet fan, 1998 is the last time I felt like this. Like, well, wow, my team's expected to do well. I mean, and we made it to 2 championship games under Rex, but you never felt like we were the best team in the division. Never felt like you had any chance of being near the best team in the conference. You were just hoping that you would figure it out and sneak into the playoffs both years. This was very different, and it's I'm very pumped up about it.
Okay.
And the difference, 98, we had the coach.
Yep.
Who was bigger than the game, who was the best coach in the game. And we have Vinny off his career year, but you felt like he could repeat it if you unfortunately injured the Achilles, but oh well, so much for that.
And you had Corbett and you had Curtis Martin. You had like great skill guys.
Yeah. This time around it's the great quarterback that we brought in with a lot of other pieces in place. You're hoping that, and we'll talk about this on our preview more. But we're hoping that, you know, Rodgers added to the cast that we brought back from last year just elevates the Jets.
I agree. But we will talk a lot more Jets and Giants and all that other fun stuff.
We had two big pieces of news come out this week in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp is out for game one. He is dealing with the hamstring issue and seeing a specialist. And McVay would not rule out that he is going on the IR. So it's not looking good right now with Cooper Kupp. And the other piece of injury news that came out was regarding Travis Kelce. He hyperextended his knee during practice. They're saying that it's only a bone bruise, and likely he's going to avoid any kind of serious injury. Right now, he's listed as questionable for week one. Any other NFL news, guys?
I mean, the Taylor and Jones stuff, the neither guy playing is still big. I mean, these, Kareem Hunt still hasn't found the home. I mean, there's a few players out there that will be on rosters over the next couple of weeks, depending on how injuries work out. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Chiefs come to terms with Jones or if he's dealt. That's the other big news there, because there's a lot of talk about that.
It certainly
would seem like Davante Adams is the other one who also looks to be unhappy, wants to play for the Jets. Okay, you got to love that. And then the Raiders also, Chandler Jones, does not want to play for McDaniels. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there.
And the other unhappy player we heard of was Mike Evans.
Oh, that's true.
Still dealing with an issue. We will see what happens with that.
Well, I believe he wants to come to the Jets too, right?
Yeah, well.
Everybody wants to be a Jet now because Rodgers is here.
Yep.
This has been the laughing stock franchise for years. It's very funny. Anyway, I know we're going to get to a lot more NFL on the next episode, so we won't kill too much of it now. But yeah,
the only other point I saw today was Nick Bosa did sign for the 49ers.
For the record,
5-year, $170 million with $122 guaranteed, largest for a non-quarterback in history.
By a lot.
By plenty. Yep.
You mean only $122 million guaranteed? Wow, yeah. Man. Woo.
Poor guy.
All right. We're going to move on. Kev, what's going on with the U.S. Open?
U.S. Open, real quick. On the women's side, the semifinals are set. We've got a chance for an All-American final. Madison Keys won her match today against Vondrousova. That just got over a little while ago. She'll play Sabalenka, the 2 seed, who honestly, I've never heard of, and she's moving up to number one in the world.
Well, she's been good. She's been good for the last year, Kev. She's actually a really, really good player.
I'll be honest. I had never really heard of her.
Well, there's a lot of Russian surnames in this sport.
Yep.
They can all get confused.
On the other side, more of the phenom, Coco Gauff, the 19-year-old. She's number 6 in the world, or succeeded in the U.S. Open. She'll play Muchova, who's a 10th seed. So, again, we're looking at Gauff and Keys maybe winning and setting up a All-American final. On the men's side, the main event, if it happens, as everybody is hoping for, Alcaraz is playing Zverev right now.
He won the first set.
Thank you. Medvedev, the 3 seed, took care of Rublev today. So Medvedev would face Alcaraz if he wins. On the other side, we do have an American man reaching the semifinals, unseeded Shelton. Makes it to the semis, where he'll take on the 2 seed Djokovic.
I don't know if either of you have seen Shelton play. Serves at about 149.
Yeah.
He hits it a ton. He was playing at the University of Florida this time last year, and now he's in the U.S. Open semifinals.
Either way, assuming Alcaraz gets through, and I think just for the final, I definitely want to see Alcaraz reach the final. And I think you're the way you can't lose. If you've got Shelton, you've got the American kid you can root for. If you've got Djokovic, you've got another great battle potentially with Alcaraz and Djokovic.
Good point. No,
it should be really cool.
And I wish I could watch it, but I've got Spectrum and the stupid dispute, and I can't watch anything on ESPN right now.
It's the biggest joke ever, by the way.
Anything on the U.S. Open, guys?
No, I think I covered it pretty well. I just wanted to give you that Alcaraz won the first set. That's all, because it just happened. Just finished a couple of minutes.
All right. Darren, tell us what's going on with baseball.
Few things, just a couple of interesting things before we get to the teams. Royce Lewis, 3 grand slams in 8 days. That's quite impressive. Yep. Most guys don't go their entire career with 3 grand slams. So to do it in 8 days, wow, you know? Really impressive. Altuve hit three homers yesterday. First time in his career, he hit three homers. Happened to do it before all the Rangers got a chance to bat. They had only gotten through the first six men in the lineup by the time he hit his third homer, before 7, 8, 9 got a chance to come up. I've never even heard of such a thing. It might have happened in the past. I don't know, but I thought that was an interesting stat. Urias gives the Dodgers a nice blow as he has some violent outrage with domestic violence. That's definitely an interesting thing there, Kev.
Yeah, second time in 4 years he's been through this. So as a repeat offender, he might be done.
Hurts my fantasy team here in the playoffs, by the way. But so be it. What are you gonna do?
Putting aside the heinous acts that he's accused of and everything else, from a baseball perspective, boy, that hurts the Dodgers, because right now it's Kershaw, it's Miller, and what?
Lance Lynn. It's not as good as the Braves, is what it's not.
Lance Lynn, Sheehan's made a couple starts here. I mean, they're really hurting. And as the Dodgers, you know, you wish this was back in July at least, where they could have made a move at the deadline. And I'm strictly talking from a baseball perspective here.
Of course.
Don't get me wrong here. Strictly from baseball. You know, a month ago, a little more over a month ago, the Dodgers maybe have a chance to make a move to strengthen that rotation. Right now, they look very weakened going into the playoffs.
You know, the funny thing was that the Dodgers didn't spend a lot in the offseason. They were almost like, yeah, we're going to try to get into the playoffs, but we're going to save the money for Ohtani. And they still ended up having a pretty monstrous year. But right now, they're running into a little buzzsaw called the Marlins, who have won 7 in a row.
Yep.
A lot of crazy things there. So the Yankees.
And speaking of Ohtani.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Kev.
That came out, you know, we know last week, you know, he came out with the elbow problems and everything else, and looks like a UCL injury. They'd still have to decide if he's going for his second Tommy John or if he's going with this new brace procedure that they're starting to develop. Who knows what. But going into the free agent year, he's still got a hit. He's still got to command big bucks as a DH. But now you lose a two-way for at least a year, if not more. What do you think Shohei does? Does he go for a one-year contract or two-year contract to try to rebuild as a two-way, or is he just go for the big money anyway? And what teams are going to pay him what he was looking at 2 weeks ago?
Big money. Yeah. I think it's still, I don't know, $40 million for 8 years. I think it's still on the table. I think the Dodgers are all in. I see this coming. So he won't pitch for a couple of years. If with other players, this would be a huge detractor. But if all I'm going to get is his offense and he's still going to give me, you know, 40 home runs playing DH and, you know, throwing 8 innings, 10 innings a year, I'm taking it, you know. And listen, he may not be able to pitch a season, but the Dodgers get into the playoffs next year. Ohtani's on their roster. All he's been doing is basically hitting all year, strengthening the arm up. And all of a sudden, you know, here comes Game 7 of a playoff series and Ohtani's in there to pitch one inning. And, you know, I could see this a mile away. So, Darren?
Listen, he was looking at $60 million a year. I mean, you're saying 40 now. That's a big drop off. I'm not saying it's not a lot of money. It's a huge amount of money, but it's a considerable drop off. I don't know if I would go for a long term deal. I don't know if I would. I would try to see if I could pitch again, because you know he's going to hit anyway. You know he's going to get the 7-8 year $40 million contract in 2 years anyway. If he still can't hit, if he's able to come back and pitch, I might just take a 2 year deal. See if someone's willing to offer me 2 for $80.
When you say. Who are you referring to take the deal?
I'm saying Ohtani.
But you don't think the Dodgers are going to be in this for $500 million?
Well,
why would you?
It's $40 million times 10 is what you're saying, right? When he was looking at $60 million times 10 a month ago.
Okay, but listen, I'm just throwing numbers out there. But the Dodger offer is going to be $500 million. So if the Dodgers
are you sure? Office, how do you go that high if he can't pitch?
No,
it's a big push for an offensive player.
I definitely think it's $500 million's on the table.
So now you're saying 10 years for 50 million. Now you're saying 10 for 50. That's a big difference in 10 for 40. You actually started 8 for 40. You started 320. Now you're up to 500. You just grew 180 million. I want you to be my my financial guy.
I think the deal is somewhere between 4 and 500 million, and I think the Dodgers are all in.
You don't think the Yankees would be all in or the Mets?
I don't think he wants the East Coast, Darren. I think he strictly wants the West Coast, and if it's the West Coast, there's only three or four teams that are going to be in this, unless you're telling me Seattle's a wild card. But other than that, it's the Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres. That's it.
I can't see even the Padres having the money to do this one. They're overspent everywhere.
Okay, but it's still, to me, it's still the three or four teams on the West Coast, and that's it.
No, I'm just saying, what if the Angels come back and say, hey, we'll give you 2 for $80?
But if the Dodgers offer him, I don't know, split it, $450 million, why would he take 60?
I don't think the Dodgers offer him that, to be honest.
I think they're looking at 8. I think that it's very close to what you first said. I think it's about 320.
Okay, so even if it's 320.
What did Judge wind up with?
Judge, he was.
Did he get 10 or did he get 8 years? But about $40 million per.
It was 40 million per.
I think it was
8. I'm not 100% though. I believe it was 8. I think that Ohtani's in the same class with Judge if he can't pitch.
As a hitter. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in the same vein.
So that's 8 for 320. Like to our point, I think, you know, you take a chance, you know, 2 for 80, knowing in 2 years you still got that 40 million.
When you say take a chance, who are you referring to?
Ohtani. Ohtani's betting that he's going to be pitching and someone's going to give him $60 million in 2 years. Yeah. That's what I'm saying he's taking a chance at.
Well,
he goes from 8 for 320 to 8 for 480, and he makes 80 in between, and he gets his 560. That's what I'm saying.
I think at the worst, he gets
8 for another – otherwise, he gets another 320 in 2 years.
I don't think this is a short-term deal. I think someone's in it for 400 to $500 million, and that's it. And if you're Ohtani, why would you say no to that?
Oh, you don't.
I don't think anyone's going to. I mean, if you're a GM right now, do you want to sit there and say, hey, you have a UCL. We hope you come back strong from it. We don't know. We think you could DH. We don't know if there's any lingering effects with your bat, if you're going to have issues playing anywhere, throwing the ball at all. You're going to have to be a DH exclusively. Am I going to give you that much money? It's a question. I'm not saying he's not worth it. I'm just saying it's a question.
I would actually
go short term if I was him right now. I mean, I might be in the minority on that, but that's what I would do.
Well, I just think there's going to be a long term deal out there.
If there is one, then I'm sure he'll accept it. It's going to be a lot less than he was looking at a month ago. He was looking at $60 million a year.
But if this deal
was a pitcher hitter. At worst, 50.
No, but what I'm saying is, if this deal winds up being, I don't know, $460 million, you know, I don't know how he's turning this down. Seriously.
I get your point.
Yeah, I don't think, as a team, I'd be fine giving him a long-term contract, but I couldn't go more than $40 million a year not knowing if he could pitch.
So if Cohen comes out and he says, I'm going to give him 10 years, $500 million, you're against it? The answer is no, by the way.
Of course not. As a fan, of course not. But as an organization, would I do it? No.
I wouldn't do it either. Okay, but if Hal does it, I'm all in. I wouldn't agree with it.
But I'm not sure I agree as to why you're not all in.
Because $50 million a year for just a DH, no matter how good he is right now, if he's just a DH, that's a lot of money for that.
I don't know.
And to be $10 more than Judge is too much.
So now Gino's got his – he can see this in the light, and I'm not making funny when I say this. Ohtani's going to come in for one big out and one big inning next year in the World Series or in the playoffs, and he hurts his arm again. I'm just saying, and he tries to throw too much, and he hurts his arm again after throwing one batter. And then he's out offensively, and he's out, and he's not pitching now for another 2 years on top of it. I'm just saying there are a lot of things you have to look at, because if you're going to make that investment, G, he can't pitch in the World Series next year. He can't. You have to make sure he's sound, completely sound, before he can pick up a ball and throw anything, because it's too much money. It's just way too much.
You've probably got 12 months at least post-surgery, assuming he's going for surgery. Before he even starts activities.
And then you get other things like, remember, who's the Tanaka? He pitched with like a partial tear at his UCL for like 3 years without ever getting surgery, you know?
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know enough about the UCL. I know Tommy John. That's the one I know.
I think my opinion is there will be a big offer on the table. So,
and if there's a big offer, he's going to take it. I agree with you on that. I just don't know if it's going to be as big as he thought he was getting 4 weeks ago. A couple of quick baseball points, though, real quick. Jason Dominguez. Why did I think he was going to be taller? I watched him stand next to Judge. I had no idea this kid was 5'10 and just compact and powerful. First thought is, wow, he's really not very big. I mean, he's strong. He had a homer tonight. Listen, the only thing that's bothering me is that if these guys continue to win, and I want to beat Boston. I don't want to finish last. That's all I want. I just want to finish fourth. Finish ahead of Boston. That'd be great. But if they play too well, it could protect Cashman and Boone, which makes me upset. And then but this team, you know, Wells coming up. They're actually somewhat fun to watch. Volpe, who Gino doesn't like, but I do. I'm kidding, G. I'm kidding. But they have a lot of young guys. It's almost fun to watch, like watching the Mets. Only the Mets young guys were playing a couple months ago at this level where the Yankee young guys are playing now. The Mets have had some ebbs and flows, even though Alvarez hit one last night. So hopefully that gets them going again.
Yep. And Mauricio's looked great. Absolutely. He's sending the ball all over the place.
Oh, he looks like a stud. Both of these teams have some nice young potential players coming up. One pet peeve. Baseball, please, with the crap. Every team should be playing a day game on Memorial Day. Every team should be playing a day game on the 4th of July or early evening game, so you have fireworks afterwards. And every freaking team has to play on Labor Day. Baseball doesn't have any holiday where you go around it. The fact that they're not all playing on Labor Day is the dumbest thing I can possibly fathom. So stupid. My God, what does the NBA have to do with Christmas? Nothing, but they advertise it as their day. NFL, a little more synonymous with Thanksgiving, but still, they just made it a promotion. Now it's, what the hell's baseball doing? You got teams with days off on Memorial Day. You got teams with days off on Labor Day, including both Yankees and Mets. Not one local team played.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell? How is baseball this stupid? You may not get that. This is your time. Sorry. At event.
It's all right. I want to just tell you guys something. So I was looking up some stats on some guys going back a little while, but I want to just tell you something. I saw somebody out there with 32 home runs and 86 RBIs. He's hitting .332 with 123 runs. And his walks to strikeouts, it's 71 walks to 75 strikeouts. Right, That's a pretty awesome season from what I just named. That's a pretty awesome season, right?
No doubt.
Well, he's also got 63 stolen bases, and his name is Ronald Acuña. Okay,
he's done something no one's ever done.
Yeah. All right, the numbers are even just without the 63 stolen bases, his numbers are just unbelievable right now.
The funniest thing is Freeman's having a good year. But next to Acuña, it doesn't look like he is.
And Olson.
And the other thing, just for you, Gino, what was that?
And Matt Olson.
Oh, Matt Olson's having a monster year. No doubt about it. The other thing is Volpe, first Yankee to go 2020. Our bone of contention with a 210 hitter. You got to love it. Great stat. What else you got, Jake?
All right. So – are we ready, Kev? Baseball?
I've got one more. Can't believe the way Houston's just taken Texas out back of the woodshed and just whacked them.
Scherzer got rocked tonight.
And tonight was Verlander, Scherzer. With how long they've been around, and I know they were teammates in Detroit and a little bit with the Mets. First time they've ever matched up on the mound. I was surprised at that.
Also, first time two guys that are former Cy Young winners, stupid stat, that were on the same team earlier in the season pitched against each other later in the year. Dumb stat that you can hear, but somebody said it earlier, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. And the last stupid stat I have, the Yankees were 69-69 going into tonight. They won. Last time that happened, 1969.
Wow.
Just thought it was interesting.
The other stupid stat, Dominic Leone pitches on the same mound for three different teams within 3 weeks. With the Mets, he was on the Angels when they came in, and then he was on the Seattle when they came in.
You got to love the guy that's pitched badly for three straight teams.
He's pitched badly for about 12 straight teams, I think.
Well, Lucas Giolito's been awful for three teams this year. I mean, there's a lot of guys like this. It's been awful. Plenty of guys like that.
And yet he keeps getting picked up by somebody else.
Because he's got a rocket on, but he just doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Before we get into the college football preview, Darren, why don't you give us a little recap of some games from last week?
Okay, so last week you had your – you know, week one. So you get a lot of games that don't really matter. So you got your typicals, you know, Oklahoma beats Arkansas State 73-0, you know. Ole Miss beats Mercer 73-7. Oregon 81, Portland State 7. Syracuse beats Colgate 65-0. You know, so you get these games that you expect to get. But we had a couple of really good ones. The upsets of the week were these. Wyoming beats Texas Tech, who was ranked 24th going into that game. They were down late, came back. Scored late, beat them on a two-point conversion after scoring a touchdown on the 4th and 7 in the overtime. So that's a huge win for Wyoming. Not expecting. I mentioned the game last week that was like another feature matchup, but it really turned out to be a feature matchup. I'll save the big one for third, but Clemson gets knocked off by Duke 26-7. Not really much of a game. Really totally controlled. By Duke. I mean, Clemson moved the ball a little bit, but not much. And well, in the big one that Kev had, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Clemson did have the ball inside the 10 three different times and came in with no points three different
no
times.
No doubt about it.
Two fumbles, a blocked field goal.
But when you lose by 19, it's really hard to blame it on any one or two particular drives. But you're right. I mean, Clemson moved the ball up and down. They just did not score. And trying new offensive coordinator, the whole thing, and it just did not seem to work out. And, of course, the big one, and Kev called it. I don't know if you called the upset outright, but I know you picked Colorado last week.
Yep.
So primetime goes into TCU, wins 45-42. Shedeur Sanders is all of a sudden talk of a Heisman, also talk of being an NFL first-round pick. I mean – Colorado, who you'll hear my Pac-10 preview later, so I won't get into it. This is a one-win team last year that changed over 75% of their roster. You know, they were 20.5-point underdog, biggest underdog to win against a ranked team on the road in the first week of the season since like 1989 or something like that. It was some sort of stat like that. I can't remember the exact year, but it was something like that. And it's, you know, I didn't get to see the whole game. I'd be lying to say I did, but the highlights I saw, very impressive for Colorado. I don't know if either one of you guys saw that.
Unfortunately, no.
But it was upset that you did not expect. You know, we talked about the other notable games, a couple of the close ones. Nebraska, just as a snake bit team, they are now 2-14 in games decided by one score over the last two seasons. They were up 10-3 late on Minnesota. Minnesota converts on a fourth down. The guy got a toe tap down, got his back foot down. The front foot landed out, but he got it back. And then they won in overtime. So Matt Rhule's first game in Nebraska, he had it won, and they gave it away, even though Nebraska's only touchdown was a fluke play as well. It was a flea flicker. Illinois came back and beat Toledo and really was a great game. Toledo took a lead late, and Illinois hit a field goal late. The other featured couple games, Florida State pulled away from LSU. Game was real close. A lot of concern about, I guess, Kelly's comments after the game. LSU people want him fired, you know, because he's 0-1. So that's, you know, grounds for firing, of course. In the Battle of the Carolinas, you know, the heels were a little too much for the Cox. Sorry, Kev. The D-line just dominated. And, you know, I saw a decent amount of this game, and they just dominated. And then the final big matchup was Florida got easily manhandled at Utah. Utah playing without their starting quarterback. Rising did not play. They had this number two and a number three, and it didn't seem to matter. Florida was not a factor. They scored late. The game was 24-3 when they scored that late touchdown. So that's just a synopsis of week one.
Okay. I think we're going to start with Kev on the conference previews. We each have a couple, so we're going to go through. I have one. You guys have two each. Kev, you want to start us off? Pick a conference. Talk to us a little bit.
I'll save the best for last. I'm going ACC first.
Good enough.
I did a lot of this, and fortunately my picks don't look too good after the Clemson-Duke matchup, but really we're looking at two main contenders coming into the season. You're looking at Florida State. You're looking at Clemson. Now, Florida State, Mike Norvell's been turning around. Coming off last year as their first top 15 since 2016. Strong returning class. You know, they've got 14 players returning, strong recruits, and some transfers in there. Jordan Travis, that quarterback, is a terrific dual threat quarterback, running, throwing the ball. Basically, with the returns, with everything else they've got coming in, they're basically too deep across the board. Their weakness last year is the rush defense. If that's shored up, this team's in contention for a spot in the playoffs. The other team is Clemson. Yeah, they look bad. They were bringing in Garrett Riley from TCU as the offensive coordinator. The question for them, I think, was whether or not Kate Klubnik can step up this year. A little shaky last year at times. Thought they should be leaning this year on Will Shipley coming back. He's a running back. They've got some good young wide receivers, Antonio Williams, Bo Collins, Jake Bridenstuhl. Again, another solid D coming back as well. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., for example. But that loss to Duke just really trips him up. That could be a tough one to overcome. Other ones in there, you mentioned North Carolina. This is Mac Brown's fifth year. Their quarterback, Drake May, is a true Heisman candidate. The guy's some player. They've got lots of seniors on the offensive line, so this offense should score all year. The D was awful the last couple of years. The only guy they really had coming back was Cedric Gray. They brought in a bunch of transfers, and this D showed up against the Gamecocks. They sacked Rattler 9 times. So that defense can play like this. This is a team that could possibly pass even Clemson and finish second in this conference. Duke, of course, we saw a win. They've got junior quarterback Riley Leonard coming back. Returned 8 starters on both sides of the ball from last year's team that won 9-4. They won the bowl game for the first time since 2018 last year. This was their first win against a top 10 team since 1989. So this is a team that's on the rise. I think they're still the fourth best team in the conference. We'll see. A couple other teams that you look at. Pitt won 20 games the last 2 years, but they lost their leading passer, rusher, receiver, pass rushers, and both safeties.
Wow.
They're giving Phil Jurkovec as the first crack at being the starting quarterback. Christian Vio was backup at Penn State. He also came in. He played a little bit in the second half in their big win. The big question for them is if they added enough on defense. NC State, solid defense last couple of years. They lost their quarterback, Devin Leary, to Kentucky, but brought in Brendan Armstrong from Virginia. 2 years ago for Virginia, he threw for 4,400 yards, slumped last year. If he can go back to that quarterback, then NC State's got a chance to really finish top half of that conference. Miami was 5-7 last year. This is Mario Cristobal's second year there. He replaced both coordinators. The question is really hinges around their quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke. 2 years ago, QBR was 11th in the country. Last year, dropped all the way to 81st. If Van Dyke can bounce back to what he was 2 years ago, there's another team that's going to be real tough. A couple of other notes on a couple of other teams. Louisville, if you remember, a couple of years ago, Jeff Brohm was the quarterback. He's now in his head coach. They added 25 transfers into this team. So too early to know how they're going to mesh. Wake Forest needs to replace Sam Hartman. He got transferred to Notre Dame. And the rest of the conference, just, I don't know, there's really not much to talk about. I think the only other one is Virginia. They're going to be coming back from losing the three players last year to the gun violence, unfortunately. Mike Collins survived. He did return to the field, so that gave them emotional lift.
But just one comment on Virginia for you, Kev. They're actually a 6-point dog at home against James Madison. That just tells you where the program is right now. Yeah. And you feel awful for the kids that were lost, but the talent in Virginia is at an all-time low to me, in my opinion.
Yep. Darren, any other comments on the ACC that you want to add?
No, I mean, listen, you know, if I was going to pick a sleeper team, you know, out of those, I would have probably said Duke, but I didn't think they were going to be Clemson. I just thought that they would sneak into the top four. So very impressed with what they did. I always, you know, I root for Wake. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to put together. You know, Clawson does a good job there. So I'm hoping that team can finish in the top half. I think North Carolina is going to end up winning the conference over Florida State. I think it's going to be a barn burner. That's just my take. I think it's going to be real close. What'd you say? I do. I like Mac Brown with a couple of years under his belt, too. Yeah. And Florida State, though they look really, really good, I think that North Carolina can go up and down the field with them a little bit. We'll see.
Okay.
I'm going to do Big 12 real quick. Interesting conference. A lot of things going on. It's the last year for both Oklahoma and Texas, you know, so two mainstays in this conference are gone. Four newcomers come in, Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, all from the AAC, and then BYU was an independent last year. So this league has 14 teams. In years past, they always bragged that this was the conference where everybody plays everybody every season, and that's the whole thing. So you had your 9 conference games against the other teams. No longer going to be the case. So everybody, it's an uneven schedule this year, a little different. I got 5 contenders, okay? Texas, Sarkisian's team, all right? Last year in the league, Arch Manning, the 5-star superstar, third-generation legacy, will not play because Quinn Ewers will, but he is making about as much money as Joe Burrow with all the NIL money. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Quinn Ewers leads the way. Jalen Ford's a great defensive player. They got a ton of good wide receivers, lots of talent. Their big game is going to be at TCU on November 11th. That's going to determine if – every team has that road game that they have to find a way to overcome. Obviously, the Red River battle that they'll play in early October is a big game, but this is the one that they have to find a way to win if they're going to win the conference or at least get into the championship game. It's also 14 teams, no divisions, okay? So it's straight up. There's no 7-7 where the two teams meet. It's going to be the top two. Oklahoma, another contender. Brent Venables, second year, already on the hot seat. Why? Because you finish under 500 your first year at Oklahoma. Giving up 30 points a game. If you don't remember what Oklahoma last year, it's easy to forget. They were getting smoked by everybody. They were giving up 40, 50 points in games last year. Listen, they have Dylan Gabriel back at quarterback. They got Deshaun McCullough as anchor of the team at the linebacker. They picked up a lot of transfers. Again, it's hard to know how they're all going to fit in, but the defense should look better. And they won 73-0 against Arkansas State last week. So let's see if that's a start for them. Their big game is the Red River game. They're going to have to beat Texas in order to be considered legitimate as they go forward. If I tell you who won the conference last year, the Big 12, most people don't remember it was Kansas State, but it was Kansas State. They beat TCU in the final. Chris Kleiman, him and Craig Bowl at Wyoming were the two guys that built the dynasty up at North Dakota State in the FCS. He's been good ever since he got here, to be honest with you. This is defending champs. Will Howard returns a quarterback. He took over halfway through the season last year, had a really good year. Defense lost a couple of big players, and the offense lost Deuce Vaughn, who was the little 5'5 running back that reminds you of Darren Sproles, also from the same school back in the day. So they have some things to replace, but they are consistent. They just play hard. They play fundamentally sound. They had big games at Texas, 11-4. They have to find a way to win that game to make sure that they're secure. TCU was a team I had as a contender. I'm not changing it yet because they didn't lose a conference game, but Colorado did a pretty good number on them. Sonny Dykes back. Chandler Morris replaces the all-everything quarterback, Max Duggan. But if you remember correctly, Morris had the job last year. He got hurt and Duggan took over. They replaced a lot of big pieces, but they do have a lot of talent on the field. Again, they're going to have to play at Oklahoma on 11-24, big game for them. And the fifth contender is Texas Tech, Joey McGuire, second year there. They lost their opening game. So I'm doing real good with my contenders. Tyler Shaw, who's out of a transfer from Oregon, back at quarterback. Team has some good talent. They have not won an outright title in this conference since 1954. So it's been a long time for Texas Tech. People probably don't realize how long with some of the talent that's been through there. They could be a dark horse, and their big game is at Texas on 11-24 also. I got four pretenders, all right? Kansas, first team I kept out. Lance Leipold, you know, they have a good quarterback in Jalen Daniels. They're trying to repeat for a bowl game for the first time in quite a while. They haven't been to back-to-back bowls in like 15 years, so that's a big deal for them. Cincinnati, Scott Satterfield squad, they have a really good defense. Don't know if they have the offense to play in this conference. We'll see. Oklahoma State had question marks at quarterback, which is why it's hard to put them in any kind of a real contender kind of role. And UCF, another team that's coming from the AAC. Gus Malzahn, you know, coached over at Auburn. He's finally in the Power Five trying to show what they can do. You know, they have an okay offense, okay defense. I wouldn't say anything special. The teams fighting just to get bowl eligible will be Houston, Iowa State, BYU, West Virginia, and Baylor. That means they're just trying to fight to get the 5 or 6 wins and see if they get a bowl. My order of finish, my prediction, Texas I have winning it, Kansas State second, TCU third, Oklahoma fourth, Texas Tech 5. That's the top 5 the way I have it. And that's a little synopsis on the great Big 12. Gino, let's talk Big 10.
Big 10. Ooh. So this conference is loaded with contenders. They got 3 contenders in Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. All 3 of them will be competing as we go through. Penn State's probably one little notch below Michigan and Ohio State, but they'll be in it. And then you got at least 5 or 6 teams that are going to be competing to make a bowl. So the conference itself is a pretty loaded conference. We'll start at the top. It's Michigan. Listen, the path to the Big Ten goes right through Ann Arbor. This is Harbaugh's team. He's loaded on both sides of the ball. He's returning quarterback J.J. McCarthy. He's got a 1-2 punch at running back with Blake Corum and Edwards. And he's probably got the best offensive line with a couple of guys that they brought in from the transfer portal. Defense is, if you're going to list any kind of concerns, it's the defense. But he brings back 7 starters. He's got a lot of good players coming in. This team is loaded. They're ready to go. The second team on this list is Ohio State. They are trying to reload a quarterback because obviously C.J. Stroud is now in the NFL, along with three key linemen that they lost. The receiving corp is anchored by Marvin Harrison Jr. It's one of the best in college football. They got 2 big running backs in Trevion Henderson and Miriam Williams. The offensive line is a little bit of a work in progress. They're trying to come back, but this team is going to be really, really good. Kyle McCord looks like the front runner to replace Stroud. This unit, it doesn't have a ton of glaring needs, but it addressed some of them in the portal. So the only thing that they have really going for them right off the bat, even though the quarterback is in flux this year, they're going to lean on that defense, and it's going to be a good squad. So this is the second team that's got playoff hopes. The third team is Penn State. Nittany Lions are just a notch under those first two, but they got quarterback Drew Allar. He's a rising star. He's going to elevate this passing game. K2 have a couple of really good running backs in Singleton and Catron Allen. And they're going to have one of the top defenses in the Big Ten. They got linebacker Abdul Carter. They got some good ends. And Manny Diaz on the defensive coordinator's got these guys raring to go. So those are the 3 contenders. And when I say contenders, they're all going to be in the talk for the college football playoffs. It's not just the contenders in their conference. Underneath that, you got a list of teams that are going to fight to make a bowl. You got Maryland, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, and then the pretender category has Rutgers in it. You got Indiana. You got Illinois. You got Nebraska, Purdue, Northwestern. So if you look at some of these other teams, you know, Wisconsin is probably going to be a pretty good team. They're going to have one of the top defenses in the conference. They're returning 8 players on their defense. I mean, this is going to be a good squad. Offense is a little bit of a change. Phil Longo is taking over the offensive side of the ball. Even, you know, I know Luke Fickell's going to have this team playing well, but I don't know how good this team is going to be offensively. Can they put up with some of these? Can they, you know, go against some of these bigger teams in this conference? I don't know, but they'll be in it. Key games, Darren. You ready?
I'm ready.
The big three all play each other. It almost looks like a round robin tournament. So October 21st, Penn State's at Ohio State. November 11th, Michigan's at Penn State. And November 25th, Ohio State's at Michigan. Those three games probably going to decide a lot of what happens at the top of this standing. So that's for the Big Ten. Kev, we're going back to you, and I have a feeling you're going to the SEC next.
SEC, the power conference in college football.
Let's see how far Kevin has South Carolina up in the standings.
Let's go. I'll be realistic here. They're winning the entire thing.
Of course they are. The North Carolina game was a fluke.
That's right.
And wait, just to remind everyone, Kevin's son is now a sophomore at South Carolina. Please continue, Mr. Kevin.
So, by the way, Gino, you picked Michigan to win it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Michigan, yes.
Okay.
So the SEC, this is the last year with divisions. They have an East and a West. Next year, when they bring in Oklahoma and Texas, they will do away with divisions. So in the East, actually in both divisions, I think they have a top two. And solid teams throughout, and Vanderbilt. So in the East, Georgia, of course, is your two-time defending national champion. Carson Beck will replace Stetson Bennett at quarterback, but they return Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, the running backs Edwards and Milton. They're adding transfers and Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas. On D, terrific last year against the run, solid against the pass, but they do need to replace their cornerback, Kaylee Ringo, and their safety, Christopher Smith. They would be battling Tennessee, I think, all year for the top spot. Now, Tennessee, very interesting team. Joe Milton will be the starting quarterback. This is his third chance at being a starting quarterback. Back in 2020 in Michigan, he lost the job to Cade McNamara. Transferred to Tennessee, 2021, lost his job to Hendon Hooker. So this is, like I said, this is his third chance to get it done. He's got the big time arm, but he needs to harness it. Showed well in the Orange Bowl versus Clemson. Let's see if he can carry that over into a full year. They return the running back Small and Wright, return 3 of the top 5 wide receivers, veteran offensive line. They've got a deep defense led by Aaron Beasley and Kamal Haddon. They did well with the transfers. I think the difference in this, you've got two things to factor in. One, the matchup between Georgia and Tennessee will be in Georgia. In Tennessee. Tennessee will be the home team there. But when you look at the games they play against the other division, each team plays 2 against the other division. Georgia's got at Auburn and home for Miss. Tennessee is home for Texas A&M. Fairly equal with Mississippi, but Tennessee also has to travel to Alabama. So a couple of chances there for Tennessee to get knocked off even before they play Georgia. Non-conference, neither team plays really that well out of conference. The other teams in there, you've got Kentucky. Solid defense last year. They returned most of their players. They need to replace Will Levis, who was banged up last year. They struggled on offense, but they had a bunch of key players that were freshmen last year. They'll step up now. They have Devin Leary transferring in from NC State. We'll see if this team can bounce back and advance off what they showed last year. If the offense comes back, one, with a healthy quarterback, and two, with these young players with a year of experience under the belt. Missouri, another team with a good defense last year, they return 12 of their top 16 defenders. Brady Cook returns a quarterback. He put up decent numbers. He played with a torn labrum in his right shoulder all year. They do have a transfer from Miami, Jake Garcia. They have a redshirt freshman, Sam Horn. If Cook does not progress, they return three offensive line starters. They return the two running backs and Schrader and Pete. They've got transfers at wide receiver and a new offensive coordinator in Kirby Moore. I think those two battle for 3 and 4. And then I think it's a little step back. South Carolina, there's my Gamecocks. I have them fifth in the division, unfortunately. Beamer Ball, you know they're going to be solid on special teams between Beamer and Lembo, who is a special teams coordinator. They bring back Spencer Rattler, who played – I knocked him all year, and then he played great those last 3 or 4 games. They bring back Juice Wells, who did not play against North Carolina. Xavier Leggett, who had a big game. The offensive line lost 3 starters, and if they're going to give up 9 sacks to North Carolina, I'm afraid to see what the good defenses of the SEC can do against that offensive line. The secondary last year was solid, but the front 7 was abysmal. They're going to need to show some big improvement there. I think last year they won a couple of games thanks to their special teams. I don't know if you can count on that again this year. They might slip back to 500. Florida's off back-to-back 6 and 7 years. They've got, if not the hardest schedule in the country. We already saw them play at Utah. They've got a big conference game at LSU. The end of the season at Florida State. So really tough there. Graham Mertz transfers in from Wisconsin to play quarterback. They've got 5 other new offensive starters. They've got changes at linebacker, changes in the secondary. We'll see if Florida can get above 500 this year or not. And then Vanderbilt, off a bad team, they lost 12 transfers anyway. Fairly easy non-conference schedule, maybe get a couple wins there, but projections are they're going to be double-digit dogs in just about every other game they play. So I think in that, I think because of the game being in Tennessee, I think Tennessee is able to take this division from Georgia.
Really?
I do. All right.
Cool.
Nice. I think Tennessee will lose at Alabama, but I think Tennessee will beat Georgia at home. They'll both finish tied, and I think with the tiebreaker, I think Tennessee will take the division. Out west, LSU is the defending champion. But I think, no, you can't knock or can't pick against Alabama to win this division. For a change, you're not the preseason consensus number one team in the country. That's something that you're not used to with Alabama. Lots of turnover. They've changed both coordinators, including Tommy Reese coming in from Notre Dame to be the new offensive coordinator. They've got the new quarterback to replace Bryce Young. That looks like they're starting with Jalen Milroe to start. But they do have the transfer from Notre Dame also, Tyler Buckner. Obviously, the connection with Reese. We'll see what Milroe can do. I mean, it's funny. This is a team that loses their running back, Jahmyr Gibbs. They lose 3 offensive linemen, 2 D linemen, 2 linebackers, 2 safeties. But they still have a ton of talent there. And you know Saban always puts together a top 1 or 2 recruiting class. Plus transfers coming in. They're still going to be very deep all around. They've got the big non-conference matchup coming up this weekend, which we'll talk about, against Texas. I think that's a big proving game for them. LSU, you touched on it a little bit before with their loss to Florida State. Brian Kelly's second year, already some pressure on him, especially with his comments. They return Jaden Daniels. They signed the number six recruiting class in the country. They're very deep. They've got 10 incoming transfers who are starters at other FBS schools. But again, very challenging schedule, just like everybody else does in the SEC, it feels like. Texas A&M, always been solid with defense, usually top 20 ranked. The last 2 years, they were preseason top 10 and dropped out of the rankings by the end of the season. So what does Jimbo Fisher do to fix the offense? He brings in Bobby Petrino. We'll see how that works out. They do return the sophomore Connor Wegman at quarterback. They've got good weapons at wide receiver, an experienced offensive line. I think they'll be in the battle, but I think they'll hold off Ole Miss for third in that division. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin is the coach there. He's brought in over 40 transfers the last 2 years, including Spencer Sanders this year from Oklahoma State. They added the defensive coordinator, Pete Golding, who is at Alabama. But they have trips to both Alabama and to Georgia. So those are two tough games that they're likely to lose. That'll keep them, I think, behind Texas A&M. Mississippi State, Zach Arnett, who was a defensive coordinator last year, was the interim coach after Mike Leach passed away right before the bowl game. He is officially the head coach. What's going to be interesting on this team is the offensive coordinator is Kevin Barbe from Appalachian State. App State was one of the few teams that ran the ball more than the average team. And, of course, remember, Mike Leach was all about throwing. So we're going to see how this transition works with the offensive players they have returning. Are they going to go more offensive coordinator comfort with running, or are they still going to go Mike Leach with the passing? Well, that'll be an interesting thing to see. Arkansas, Sam Pittman's the coach. They had to replace both coordinators because they left for better jobs. The defense returns about half of their top players. And they're adding almost an entire new defense as well as on top of what they have returned from the transfer portal. They return the quarterback, KJ Jefferson, who is a terrific dual threat, but they lose their top five receivers from last year. So who knows what they're going to be throwing it to. Auburn, they have a new head coach, Hugh Freeze. They've got transfers, including Michigan State quarterback Peyton Thorne, five receivers, four offensive linemen, nine defensive linemen and linebackers. Again, with the transfers coming in, no idea how they're going to react. Right now, you got to pick them last, I think, in that division. So I think that leaves Tennessee, Alabama as your matchup. And in the rematch from a week four or week five matchup.
Third Saturday in October, whatever that is.
They will be – Alabama will win this conference go to the national semifinals.
Sounds like a plan.
And that's my SEC. Hopefully, I didn't take too much time.
And here we go with the Pac-12, the Conference of Champions. Last year of this conference, officially now Stanford and Cal join SMU and head over to the ACC. So it's just Washington State and Oregon State without a home. Rumor is that they'll be independents for 1 year and they will end up in 25 over in the Mountain West. We'll see what happens. This is the league which has the best quarterback play in the entire country. Also the league that is the only Power 5 league that does not have a loss yet. Before anybody gets too excited, Arizona State barely hung on against Southern Utah. So let's not go like nuts with it. But at the same point in time, they are 13-0. Start with USC, Lincoln Riley squad. Caleb Williams, the defending Heisman Trophy winner, he makes this team go. They have big-time receiving core, solid running game. They did really well with the transfers. The biggest weakness on this team is the O-line. It's not bad. But Williams holds the ball a little long sometimes, and he will get sacked a little more often and he'll hit a little bit more than you'd like. Defensively, this team is solid. They're not great against the run. They're actually very good against the pass, not great against the run. Their big game is going to be at Oregon on November 11. Reason why this is such a big game, they have not beaten the Ducks since 2016. Oregon has had their number. This is not something that you usually see with USC where somebody owns them, so it's going to be interesting there. Oregon, Dan Lanning's squad. Bo Nix makes this team go. Another super quarterback. Came from Auburn. Is solid but not spectacular running the ball, but they have a really strong receiving core again. The O-line is good. It's not great, but it's really good. So offensively, this team will be solid. This team underachieved greatly last year defensively. A lot of talent, including the first-round cornerback, Gonzalez, that went to New England. But at the same time, they brought even more talent in. The defense should be really good. Oregon should be improved all around. Their big game is at Washington. That's going to be a battle with two big-time quarterbacks. That's going to be on the 14th. It's a border war. These two teams generally don't like each other. Utah, if I was going to say who's the two-time defending champ in the Pac-12, most people wouldn't think Utah right away, but Kyle Whittingham finds a way to win. Cameron Rising quarterback did not play in week one. They had the second and third string. Didn't matter. This is a real physical team that will run it down your throat. They play hard defense. They hit. They run. They do all the old school things that college football used to be about. They have Cameron Rising can throw the ball when they need to. But for the most part, this team's going to grind it out and play physical. And they had a really good defense last year. And I think it's going to continue with this team. Big game is at USC on 10/21 to see if they can how for real they are. Oregon State, Jonathan Smith squad. Let's see if this name you guys remember who the starting quarterback is. DJ Uiagalelei from Clemson. Most people don't transfer from Clemson to Oregon State, but he decided to go to Corvallis anyway. Had a great opening game, by the way. The transfer is an old school team. This team is actually like Utah, only a little bit more physical. They will really run the ball down your throat all day long. They play like that old school NFL, give it to Joe Morris 35 times, give it to Jerome Bettis 40 times, and let's see what we can do. They have a great offensive line. They're monstrous. They've only won 10 games like four times, and they did it last year. And the last time they did it before that was when Jonathan Smith, the coach, was the quarterback. So this is a team that, you know, hasn't had a great history, but it's really solid all around. Defensively, the team was number one in the league last year and number one in the red zone in the nation. And they have a few guys that are gone. They do miss a couple of players, but they do have enough guys that are back that should make a big difference. The one thing they didn't do a great job last year was getting sacks. They just didn't get to the quarterback enough. So it's going to be crazy for this team. We're going to see how they're going to react. Their big game is probably the last Civil War with the two teams in the same conference. This is at Oregon on 11/24. This is the last version of the Civil War in the Pac-12. It's sad, actually, to say that. This is a great matchup, great rivalry. I hate seeing that. And the fifth and final contender, in my opinion, is Washington. Kalen DeBoer starts and stops. The coach starts and stops with Michael Penix. DeBoer was the offensive coordinator at Indiana. Michael Penix was the highest recruit at Indiana in a long time. DeBoer left for Washington. He took Penix with him, and Penix had a monster year last year. Great O-line, great receivers. Defensively, the front seven should be really good. The secondary is okay. It's not great. Excuse me. And they need to force turnovers because that's something they did not do a good job of. The big game for this team is at USC on 11-4. They have to win a big road game. So those are the five contenders. Real quick, a couple of teams that are on the rise that are, to me, are pretenders, but you never know. One, Colorado, primetime. You know, got Sanders and Sanders team. They showed that they're probably better than I projected them to be, but I didn't think a one-win team was going to do more than go 6-6. So if they end up going 8-4, great. I just don't know if they're going to be strong enough to play with these other teams that just put up so many points. Washington State, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder too. Ward is back at the quarterback. He had a great year last year. Not you, Kev, but and I don't believe he's related.
I don't believe so.
But this is a team that actually has pretty good offense and solid defense all around. They're a tough out. No one's going to want to play Washington State. And the other team that's close, but I think just off the pace, is Chip Kelly and UCLA. DTR was their quarterback for the last 4 years, all right? He's gone now. Little Charbonnet in the backfield. They had a lot of big losses, but they have a true freshman and Moore that's quarterback. He lost a job out of camp to Garbers, but he played last week, and he actually looked better than Garbers when the two of them both played in the first game against Coastal. So that's a team that I think these teams, I think, are just off the pace. They're bowl teams, but they're not as good as the first five. And then these teams are fighting to get a bowl. Just Stanford, brand new head coach. Don't know what we're going to get. Arizona struggled with Southern Utah. Can't imagine anything happening there. Also brand new coach. Arizona. Most exciting thing about this team is that their offensive coordinator is a kid named Brennan Carroll, father's Pete. And then Cal, for some reason, Wilcox is in his seventh year. He's done very little in his first six, yet somehow he did enough to get a new contract. This is probably his last year if he can't do anything. So my pick is going to be the winner of the Civil War is going to be in the championship against USC. And I'm taking Oregon State. I think Oregon State is going to win the Pac-12 this year. It's an upset, definitely an upset. But I think Oregon State will beat USC. Utah and Oregon will be right there. Washington, you know, but I just think the North is a little bit tougher than the South in the Pac. And that's my take on the Pac-12, boys.
All right, so in review, we'll go in reverse order. The Pac-12 winner, Darren, is?
Oregon State for me.
Kevin, the SEC winner is?
Alabama.
Gino, the Big Ten winner is? Michigan. Darren, the Big 12 winner is?
The Big 12 winner is Texas.
And Kev, the ACC winner is?
Florida State.
Florida State. All right. We hope that's a decent preview for you guys. We are now going to do our college football picks.
One quick thing I forgot to mention, and I know, Darren, you mentioned it a little bit, but I know you've railed against this for weeks. We've all been problems with it, but now the Atlantic Coast Conference. Yes. That will have those great Atlantic Coast teams like Stanford and Cal and SMU. Ridiculous.
Money has completely taken over college football and college athletics as a whole. And it's the regional rivalries that made it so special are now no longer. They're gone. And that's what it comes down to. Nobody is going to be a natural rival to SMU in that conference. Cal at least has Stanford and vice versa. Who has SMU? Nobody. Nobody. I mean, they don't even belong there. It's whatever. I could go on this for about 2 hours if I wanted to.
The only semi-regional one still going to be the SEC.
at this point, that's it. And you know what? I mean, they're going to go after North Carolina and Virginia, and they'll eventually get them, and they'll get Clemson as well. I mean, it's just going to be in Florida State.
Yep.
But that Clemson and Florida State at least stay in the region anyway.
Yep. But anyway.
Okay, college football picks. Last week, Darren was 3-0, Gino 2-1, Kev 1-2. From this point forward, we are all picking one game. It's a game of the week. Darren or Kevin has chosen a game. We're all going to pick that game, and then we're all going to pick two other games. The game of the week this week is?
This week is Texas-Alabama. The number 11 seed Longhorns visit the number 4 seed or 3 seed Alabama Crimson Tide.
Okay, so that's going to be the first game that we're going to go through. Then we're all going to make our two other picks. Kev, you want to get the ball rolling?
Yep. Game's being played in Alabama. Texas lost a tough one 2019 last year. Looking at this year, Quinn Ewers, I don't think he played last year. I think he was hurt last year, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. They won their first game against Rice. They're going to need to score touchdowns and not settle for field goals, but I think they're going to keep this one close enough. And think about last year. I think Texas is going to cover.
I have the spread at 7.5. You guys have the same spread?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I said. With just over the touchdown, I think Texas covers, but I do think Alabama wins.
Okay. Who's your next pick, Kev?
Number two, I'm going to stay with the Texas team. I'm going to take Texas A&M, lane 4.5 at Miami. I don't think Miami's that strong. And my third game, Mississippi State, lane 9 points at home against Arizona. I'll take Mississippi State.
Oh.
Okay. I am just doing a quick check on that spread because I had something different. While we're doing that, okay, so, all right, so we're good. So my first game is going to be Alabama. I'm taking the home team here, -7.5. I think they cover this game. My second game is going to be Michigan. I'm taking a huge spread again. Seems to be my theme with these college picks right now. Michigan -37 at UNLV. And my third game is I'm going with Dion again. Colorado -3. I'm taking them. Those are my three picks. Darren.
They're playing Nebraska, by the way. Yep, which, Nebraska. If you remember correctly, used to at be Nebraska. Like, yeah, it used to be one of those games that was the Friday after Thanksgiving. That was like a rivalry game when you had Rashawn Salaam coming out and Nebraska and all their superstars. That's a big time rivalry that's starting to rekindle a little bit. Anyway, Alabama, Texas. Last year, again, 1-point game. I think this year will be close as well. I think Alabama escapes by a field goal. I think Texas covers plus the 7.5. I like their offensive weapons. I think Alabama is still trying to feel everything out a little bit offensively. I know they look good in week one, but they didn't really play anybody in week one, so it's really hard to get a gauge on that. Second game for me, this is probably the biggest non-conference home game for Kansas in a very long time. They take on Illinois. Illinois is a good team. Brett Bielema taking that to helm. But I like Kansas and Daniels at the quarterback. I think they're going to win by a touchdown at home. I'm laying 3. I'm taking Kansas. And my third one, Kev went against Arizona. I'm going against Arizona State. Oklahoma State laying 3.5 at Arizona State. When you struggle with Southern Utah, I don't believe in you. And I just don't think the Sun Devils are very good. I think Mike Gundy gets the 10-point road win. I don't think Oklahoma State's great, but I think they're better than Arizona State. So my picks are Kansas -3, Oklahoma State -3.5, and Texas +7.5.
All right. And those are the Sports Kings from Queens college football picks for this week. Please remember to join us tomorrow as we have a special episode coming out tomorrow, which will be the NFL preview. We'll be doing some playoff picks, some Super Bowl pick, some MVP stuff. We'll be doing some over-unders. Join us tomorrow night. Darren?
Let's close the show here. First and foremost, MLB. Everybody plays on Memorial Day and Labor Day. Enough of the crap. Now, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren, here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful and wacky world of sports. I hope you enjoyed a little bit of the college football preview. I know it gets a little in-depth, but we wanted to give you an idea of who you should be betting on when you're sitting there on your phone saying, I have $20 on my account and I have to throw it on somebody. Maybe just pick against us, whatever way you're most comfortable. Anyway, please download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. Facebook me. I'm going to put stuff up, respond back, share it, like it, tell everybody about it. We want the show to get bigger. We can't do it without your help. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.